Welcome back to the 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show. My name is Wayne Kimmel, managing partner of 76 Capital, the sports tech venture capital company. On this show, I get the amazing opportunity to interview top sports entrepreneurs, athletes, and executives who are helping shape and many times change the overall sports business industry. Today, we're going to talk esports and betting with the founders of Challenger. We have Chris Andres and Chris Slovak. Chris and Chris, welcome to the 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show.
Thanks. Excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
We are so excited. I mean, because this is kind of a special edition of our show. I mean, not only are we having the two of you as guests on the show, but we're really excited to be investors in Challenger. And this is amazing. It's a really amazing time to hear. I can't wait to talk to you and share with the rest of the world what Challenger is, how you guys created this business, and allow you know, the sports business world to get to know who both of you are. So without further ado, you know, Chris, wait, which one? No, you guys decide. Chris, tell us about Challenger and how you ended up starting this business.
I'll take that one. The story is actually interesting because it comes out of myself and the other Chris here, gaming. We used to, we worked with a bunch of guys and we played a lot of Battlefield. We also spent a lot of time playing fantasy sports. And long story short, one time after losing at the tournament in fantasy, but doing pretty good on Battlefield, I called up Chris and I said, wouldn't it be cool if we could play for a few dollars a kill on Battlefield? And he said, that's an amazing idea. Why can't we do that? We started diving into the market and realized there was something that was missing for guys like us who are kind of more on the average side, wanted to play, you know, real time games of skill. And so we started Challenger. It was basically because we wanted to be able to do it and it didn't exist, you know? I think that's how most businesses start.
Yeah, for us, I mean, it's just being competitive people and then wanting to compete against each other. We like to make it a little exciting. And so whether we're, you know, golfing and we're going to play a dollar a hole, or we're, you know, playing pool and it's a buck a ball, whatever that is, like, we kind of like to just add a little bit of competition to it and a little bit of consequence, and it makes it exciting. And that's what we wanted in our gaming experience, but we couldn't find it. And so in talking, it really inspired us to go and look and say, this is something that we have to do.
So let's get into it a little deeper. I mean, I think it's awesome. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, I love to see, you know, entrepreneurs who, you know, it's more than just like your job. This is something that you're passionate about gaming. You wanted to, and you're trying to find a solution and it wasn't out there. And you said, wait a second, we'll just build it. Yeah. How did that even happen? And I'd love to hear more of the story.
Sure. Yeah. I guess so. The first thing we did, I figured it actually existed, and so I just started looking up, you know, play video games for money, and all I came across really was like tournament platforms, and the 1v1 platforms. And what I kind of quickly realized was they didn't cater to the Thursday night gaming that we did. You know, we would just jump on for an hour and a half, you know, play with some buddies and then jump off. And that sort of super casual style of gameplay, which is what I think most gamers are like. They just kind of fit it in wherever they can fit it in. You know, they're not setting up saying, well, hey, from Friday night from 8 to 10, I'm playing video games. No, they get an hour in here. They get 45 minutes in here. And they, you know, they play when they can play. And there just wasn't a solution out there. There's great platforms, you know, that do tournaments and stuff like that. But I was never really good enough to do that. Chris was, but I was never really good enough to do that. And that just evolved into really us trying to figure out why. And when you looked at the market, we found that everyone was basically pulling API data, and they were all sort of building their businesses off of a very rigid set of data. And that was always at the end of the match, or it was always, you know, conditionally against certain games. And that became a real limiting factor to why you don't see sort of this ad hoc in-game contest engine. And Chris and I, our backgrounds are in data. And so that sort of sparked the way, can we figure out a technical solution to this? And And I could let Chris talk a little bit more about how we ended up where we are on the technical side, but that was sort of the evolution of it. You know, just kind of trying to find something that was there. It didn't exist. We realized why it didn't exist because it was a limitation on data. And we were the technical guys that could figure that piece out. Yeah, Chris?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that data really was the barrier to entry for being able to do what we wanted to do. And a part of that too was wanting the feed in the moment, right? So capturing it as the players are going, not waiting for the end of the match to get results, but capturing it to where if we had an interaction between two gamers and they were playing in a cash contest against one another, we wanted to be able to notify them right away, like, hey, you just won, or unfortunately you just lost, right? And then move those credits and kind of get that instant gratification element of it, right? That's really fulfilling from a gaming and excitement standpoint. And so we tried to look at a number of different integration methods, everywhere from hardware to software approaches and direct integrations, code level integrations, and ultimately settled on what was a way to grab all of the information we want that's agnostic to which game we're supporting and can support not just PC, but ultimately any platform where you can stream up video. And that's through the application of artificial intelligence and deep learning to observe what's happening within the game and see what the gamer sees and then interpret that into the data set that we use to resolve what's happening in the game. There's a lot I can go into as far as how that tech got built and the evolution of that tech over time. But ultimately, what it allows us to do is support gamers playing in any of these matches and do it in a real-time basic processing. So we're talking about seconds before we understand what the interaction was and can resolve contests between users, as opposed to needing to wait, you know, 30 minutes or more for a match to be over or data to be available on an API.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that ultimately lands us in this really important experience that we talk about, which is we call it hitting the sticks. So, you know, our goal is I can just sit down, hit the sticks, put a couple bucks on the match, the drop in, the Madden, you know, game, the race. It doesn't matter what the game is, but I can hit the sticks, put a few bucks on, make it a little bit more exciting, and then I walk away when I want to walk away, right? No scheduling. No waiting for my payouts, like none of that. And I could play with my buddies, right? I can do it in a public match. I can do it on any device, on any game. That's our goal, you know, that sort of just this super simple overlay of cash play into video gaming. We think everyone's going to do it, you know, frankly. We think it's going to be huge.
Yeah. That concept of being able to just casually play with your friends too and just fire it up on demand is really important to us. And that hitting the six concept captures that. That's what we want it to be, that easy, is like pick up the controller and play. You know, I've played games professionally in my past. I've been on teams. I've toured around. I know what that takes. I've also competed in a one-on-one basis, which I don't prefer. I don't think it's that fun. But those were the options that were available, was, you know, be on a team, be in a bracketed tournament, compete in a one-on-one private server. And that's breaking out of the norms of gameplay. And that's what we wanted to get away from. We wanted to offer something that overlays on top of the existing preferred way that gamers are playing, but gives them the ability to now play for real money.
Well, I think it's interesting what you just said, Chris. I mean, the preferred way of playing. So whether you're playing on your computer, whether you're playing on a console, whether it's Xbox, you know, or PlayStation or whatever it is, right? You know, you should be able to just turn it on, and if it's Madden or if it's whatever, it doesn't matter. And you could just play with your friends. You could play with someone that you just, you know, happens to be there at that moment. You don't have to wait for a bracket, you know, or enter a tournament and then come online at 2:24 or whatever it is. And I'm here. Where's the guy, you know, that I'm supposed to play, or that kind of a thing. It's like literally just frictionless gaming, but allowing people to wager on it. Did I get that right?
Yeah, you got that exactly right. Yeah. That's totally what it's about, is removing the friction from that process and not adding extra steps into their workflow, but just letting the gamer play how they want to play, where they want to play, when they want to play, and providing them with the options.
And, you know, today, you know, the company, you know, as you're building the business today, are there specific games that are easier for you to work with, or is it, or different systems, or what are some of the things that you're looking to, you know, to accomplish at this moment?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly certain games that are a little bit easier for us to build, but at the core, because we're doing that visual based detection, it doesn't really matter what the game is. And it doesn't really matter what the device is. You know, any device that can essentially stream, which is everything. I mean, you just look at Twitch, right? It's not every device is streaming now, right? I watch people who are rigging streaming mobile games now. So it doesn't matter as long as we can pick up sort of that video feed from the device and we've built a model for the game. And that's actually a really cool thing. Once we build the model, generally speaking, we use the same model across all devices, which is a really differentiating point for the business from a go-to-market speed perspective. But you know, it doesn't really matter. I think right now we just see the opportunity in FPS and first-person shooters because everybody's playing, you know, BR and everybody's playing Call of Duty and Fortnite, right? It's the obvious place to start. But you know, as we go, we're going to adjust and create new models of contest play that don't really exist in the market when you get into racing and sports. I mean, you can't play anywhere for $1 a kill today, and we're the first ones bringing that, you know, to first-person shooters. We have similar ideas. I don't want to talk about those quite yet, you know, but we have a bunch of similar ideas of very unique gameplay options where you can wager, but you're you know, playing Madden instead, right? You know, you know, I don't want to throw them all out there, but think about, you know, $5 on, you know, on a touchdown, right? You know, things to that level of granularity. Effectively, what is kind of known in sports betting is like prop betting, but you're doing that on your own gameplay against other real players as a game of skill.
Is this something, as you know, but you guys mentioned that growing up, you have always played and always been gamers. Is this something that you, you know, was this like, I can't believe we're actually doing this today? I mean, you know, this is, you guys, is that, do you ever sort of like pinch yourself as entrepreneurs and as co-founders of Challenger and like, man, I can't believe I'm actually doing this for a living?
I'll let Andre start that one because he's got the gamer background more than I do.
Yeah, no, I'm thrilled to be doing it, and I wake up excited every day to be working on it and have something to be this passionate about. I've been fortunate through like the course of my career to have a good intersection of like technology and gaming in the past as well. But I've either always worked for like data analytics type companies, data processing companies, that end of tech. Or for a while, I had my own company building casual games for kids. Now to kind of bring together those two skill sets in a much more ambitious way and to have much bigger targets than I've ever set for myself with something is really exciting. And the space is just so fun to be a part of, to be doing something we're passionate about. It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when I you know, is that something that, you know, it's really, you know, in getting to know you guys and work with you, I mean, you could, you know, your excitement, the passion, you can feel it, right? I mean, I remember some night we're walking around in Las Vegas trying to find a place to eat that one night. I mean, just, yeah. it was just fun being around you guys and really just, in, you know, you, it's obvious obvious that you love what you do. I mean, is that something that has been helpful as you've been, you know, recruiting and building your team, you know, sort of so that they see that they have this opportunity to be a part of something really special?
Yeah, I'll take that one. So I'd say that there's two important pieces there. One is that your team and the people who are thinking about and being aspirational to be on your team, or investors for that matter, if they don't see that passion, I think they wonder why you're doing it. And you can't have someone ever wonder what you're doing when you're doing a crazy venture like this, you know, because, you know, I remember, you know, for me, a lot of my career has always been in sort of the B2B side of the business, you know, selling SaaS and, you know, very professional and very kind of obvious what you're doing. Oh, I'm selling data and advertising to big businesses. And here I am saying, I'm going to give all that up and I'm going to go build a video game wagering company. People are like, what are you doing? Right? You're crazy. So I think the passion and the commitment that I know Chris has and being on this journey with me, it's super critical because there are tough days. There's a lot of no's that you run into. There's a lot of hurdles you run to, and you just got to keep going through that. And I think when you've done that and you're a little bit, you know, tried and true, a little scarred, your team sees it. They see the passion. They want to participate in it. And we've brought in, you know, early days, we brought in some amazing talent that was committed, just as committed as we were, basically working for free, not for free, but working for equity, right? But they were on the path with us, and they've helped us be successful. And now we're starting to be able to actually hire and staff up, and, you know, having them on board as long as they have been is making that process even easier. They know exactly what the business's culture is. They know exactly what we need to be successful. And you know, now they're finally actually taking a salary. So I think they appreciate that too, you know.
On the engineering side, you know, where we've hired engineers previously that were all salary, you got this opportunity to talk to them about this really incredible intersection of cutting edge technology and multiple different layers of that technology in an application for gaming, right? So you kind of have multifaceted. You've got the betting component, you've got the video game side of it, but you also have really cool stuff going on from a AI, deep learning, real-time data processing, and all the engines and contents engines. And you also have a financial services component to it, right? Because we are handling money between players. And so there's these layers of complexities and big problems to solve that also are very appealing to the mind of an engineer, above and beyond the fact that this is video games and it's really fun, right?
I think we only have one problem, which I heard from an employee, which was, I want to use your service, but you're not allowed to if you're an employee. So he got pretty bad out of shape over that problem. I said, look, you can help us do like demo days and things like that, you know, to relieve it. But
that is the one irony of building this business, that we were like, well, we want to do this, right? But it doesn't exist, so we should build it. And then we realize, oh, once we build it, we can't actually play on it, because that's a conflict of interest. So the thing that we're building that we wanted to do, we will not be able to do, but we're just too excited to do it. Yeah. Still. So.
Yeah. All the other gamers will, and our buddies will, and that'll be worth it. Yeah. So.
Well, you know, once, you know, so how is it going to work? I mean, let's, you know, when you're ready, you know, and how does this hit the market? Like how do you, you know, really start to let the world know about what Challenger is all about and how you're able to just hop online and play against your friends?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's when you think about go to market, especially in sort of a network solution, like that's what this is, right? You have to approach it in a pretty tried and true way of figuring out a couple things. The first thing is you got to build a brand. You've got to have trust in the brand, because that's one of the first things that people ask is like, is this legit? Is it legal? You know, because you're asking them, hey, put some money in this pot and then go play other random people, and then we're gonna move money around. It's a logical thing to ask. So to do that, you know, you build relationships with other brands. You get great investors that help bring legitimacy on the business side. You do the steps that are necessary to show that you're secure and you're trustworthy on the technical side. And then as you go to market, you kind of leverage all of that to sort of show, look, we're legit. And then the next big piece of that puzzle is you are smart about your acquisition. You have to hit the ground kind of all at once and get that sort of initial baseline of liquidity or what we would call as gamer concurrency, so that there's always somebody else on. And you mix that piece of the acquisition with really good product solutions. And Chris can talk a little bit about some of those new gameplay formats that we have coming out. And once you've done that, you kind of get enough people on, you've got game formats, you got features so that they can find each other, you make it really easy, even in a small group of community to play. You move to the next phase, which is you kind of build on all those together and you drive the community to bring their friends in. So we have ideas like bounty boards where you can invite your buddy and, you know, they can get free credits through a referral program, kind of that community generation piece. So it's kind of the three tiers, you know, build brand, build trust, acquire intelligently at scale, and then drive community interactions, right? So the network itself, you know, I don't like using the word viral. I think I told you that. You hope you go viral, you never plan on going viral, but you build community solutions, right, so that they can network. And if you do those three things together and successfully, you know, you just kind of ramp it up. You just kind of do it every game. You take that same model, step it up, step up, step it up.
Nerd Street is a national network of esports facilities, content, and events dedicated to powering competitive opportunities for gamers. The company provides opportunities for gamers of all ages and skill levels to participate in esports tournaments, camps, private events, and more for a wide variety of video games. Learn more at nerdstreet.com. That's nerdstreet.com.
Who are some of your investors, and why do you, and why did you agree to accept money from some of these said investors out there?
Yeah, so obviously 76, you guys helped lead the charge on this, and we really appreciate that. And so far the relationship's been fantastic. When we actually talked to you, you are the tech esports firm. So what a great firm to help sort of solidify what we're trying to do. And you know this space well as anybody. And so having you vet us was a tremendous sort of validation of what we're trying to do for other investors, frankly. And why we wanted to work with you is not just that, but your network, your knowledge, your experience has already started to help drive us on some tactical logistical strategies, as well as just kind of giving us some insight and things that we probably didn't know that we need to know. We've been working with another big firm called Revel out of Europe. They're actually a team of people that we know from our days at Telium, which was the previous company Chris and I were part of. And the team over there, they're super savvy on sort of Web3 and where gaming is headed, and have some amazing connections in the European esports space. And they're really kind of keen on how crypto and NFTs and block fit into the future of gaming and metaverse. And so they're fired up because they see sort of the expansion of gaming into metaverse and how the lines are going to blur. And this is just going to be the world, right? Gaming is just going to be in metaverse. That's their, big opinion. And so they're fired up on how we go forward in that world together with them. And they're just amazing business operators, a lot of operational excellence. AKS Investments, what I love about them is they're part of one of the ex-CEOs of MGM. I don't want to drop names, but they were a big part of their SPAC program. In talking with Ed and Dan, they have this amazing understanding of the cash gaming from a gambling perspective. Now, we are a game of skill, and at some point, these lines are all going to start to blur. You're already seeing it in daily fantasy with sports bookies. Like, that line is all blurred all over the place now. So, having an understanding of what the regulatory space might look like and what we have to do to be ready for when it does come, if it comes, is really, really helpful, right? And I think the other big thing, it shouldn't be a surprise to anyone, but the demographics of people who are going to Vegas are changing, right? People don't want to go and play slot machines when they go to Vegas. They're going to want to play Call of Duty. And so, for this next generation of casino, real money gambling, there's a fit there. What it looks like and how it works, I think we're all working that out as we go together. But having excellent, partners in the AKS team to do that, why would you not have that on? So I think as an entrepreneurial team, and like raising money, I would say to any, founder, yes, you want to get the money. And sometimes all you do is like, just want the money. Don't care where to get it from, but you actually do care where you get it from and who you get it from and who's on your cap table. It's incredibly important because those right investors will help open doors and will help sort of bolster the pieces where you're a little weak. Like, we're tech guys, we understand that, but esports, gaming, gambling, and Web3, like, those are areas that we could use some help. And so if our investors can bring that in, we would love to do that. And that's what we ended up with.
Well, I certainly appreciate, that and, what you mentioned about us and 76 Capital and certainly my partners, Chad Stender and Dan Bravado. And we're all really excited to work with you to build this business. And really, as we've shared with you and hopefully you're seeing it, every day, when we invest in a company, we jump on your side of the table and we're ready. We're with you, ready to go, you know, and hopefully that, you know, that it everything, you know, stays that way. And we have a great partnership and relationship as things continue. And, you know, I think it's really, you touched on something interesting about, you know, where it's all headed, the future of gaming, the future of esports, the future of betting on games, sports betting, where all this actually goes, sort of the blurring of the lines, the game of skill to, you know, what does the future look like, and how do you see it, and what are some of the things that you're building towards today?
Yeah, I mean, so in my previous job, I spent 8 years, and I spent 80% of my time on the road, and I'd say 50 to 60% of that was internationally. And so I think in the US as a whole, you know, when people say wager or bet, it's like gambling. And we have this like knee-jerk reaction, right? Everyone does. And you're like, calm down, right? Because everybody's, to Chris's point earlier, like everyone's played a buck a hole on a golf course. If you play golf, you've done that. You know, and no one would say that that is gambling, right? It's a form of skill-based wagering, and it's probably one of the oldest thing that's been around. I guess I guarantee you there was some like caveman over there be like, I'll bet my stone against yours or something stupid like that, right? And so I think you've got, you know, two big things going on. You know what? Number one, the U.S. is starting to open their eyes and realize like, hey, there is a difference here, and that it's okay. Right. And it's OK for people to wager on things like that's not as bad connotation as it for some reason has, you know, here in the States. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is, you know, because of a lot of these interactions happening within video games and digitally, you have this really interesting sort of thing. So we always talk about it when you watch football, American football, right? The gross majority, like all the people who watch, a fraction of them actually play. If you watch video games on Twitch, every single person watching a video game player on Twitch plays that game, right? And they're doing it because yes, it's entertaining, but they're also learning. And so unlike where the sort of natural workflow in sports is the bookie thing, because I'm betting on the outcome of some game or the skill of some other player, video games, it's, well, everyone is actually an opportunist to be a player. And I think that sort of dynamic is going to drive video game wagering towards the game of skill versus the majority of it being spectator based, just in my opinion. Now, I think the spectator side will be equally as big. I mean, people love watching video games. I mean, just look at some of the Dota 2 championships and the viewerships. It's unbelievable. So that's not going to go away. But, you know, there's going to be, in my opinion, a bigger market of players willing to play in cash contests. And if you really fast forward and you do pie in the sky and we start thinking Ready Player One crap, if it's all metaverse and I can literally make a living because the game is my job, which is what streamers are doing, and I can add wagering to that, and how good I am at the game in the metaverse is how much I make money. I mean, it's crazy to think about what the world could become. And you start thinking about what's happening in metaverse too, and I'm probably getting really pie in the sky, but you know, companies are starting to figure out how to make the job that you have to do a game, right? So imagine if your job is the game and it's all about cash play. It's like, it gets, you know, you start wondering like, when does the line between wagering really just become a format of payment? I want this done. I pay you, you do it, and I get a resulting, you know, digital asset of some sort. It's a crazy thing to consider. But, you know, 20 years from now, I see that happening. You know, I can see us not thinking about this in wagering. It's just a way of getting paid.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's fascinating to think about it. And what's amazing about Web3, the metaverse, what's next, is it's not far off, and it's here, but it's still early. You know, you mentioned something earlier also about the idea of what it will be like in the future walking into casinos. I say the same thing every time I walk into a sports book inside of a casino. You know, I think that, you know, the, one of the most unbelievable sports books in the world is at Circa in Las Vegas. And what Derek Stevens has built in that three-story sports book, it's phenomenal. It's got a VEASAN studio inside of it. Of course, we love that because that was one of our portfolio companies. And, you know, and we, but I mean, just this, this, but as amazing as that place is, as amazing as it is with the seats and the unbelievable screens and just this experience that no one's ever seen before, one thing that you just said is you really can't be actively playing when you're there. Okay. So imagine that place where you could actually play against your friends that are sitting next to you or across the world or across the actual book in a different section, to actually be able to play against each other while watching the NCAA tournament and while watching a football game and while and having this unbelievable experience with this amazing food and drinks. That's the kind of thing, and I'm sure you guys could probably add on to that in many, many ways. But yeah. Like, that's what I think about the future of sports books and the future of wagering and sports wagering, is that it's going to be more active. And that's why I love what you guys are doing at Challenger.
We think that's where it's headed to. And that's mainly because, to Chris's point, you know, we're doing something that we wanted, and that's what I want to do. So, you know, if we could continue to build solutions that, you know, that we want, I think we're going to be really successful. You know, that doesn't mean you don't listen to your customers, obviously, but, you know, it's just, times are changing. And, you know, what's the most interesting thing about video games, right, is the average age now, right, according to the ESLA is 34. So yeah, video games are not for kids. I know, you know, that was like the first thing everyone always asked me when I first started trying to get money for this. Like, whoa, video games are for kids. You're gonna do what? I'm like, no, they're not. You know, and the time in which people are spending on multiplayer, that competitive attitude that Andres talks about, that's increasing too. It went from, you know, 6 hours to 8 hours. And so it's just a natural progression, you know, of this space. And I think, you know, I kind of see it too, is you have a whole generation of gamers that don't even know that they're good enough to be a professional gamer. Do you know what I mean? Like, that doesn't, you don't know that because you're like, oh, I'm not good enough to get into a tournament. I would never enter into a tournament. And so as such, I never know if I'm good enough, but we're going to offer this sort of easier entry point into what we think eventually will be professional esports too, right? You can try it out, a buck a kill. Next thing you know, you're making some money. You're like, wow, I'm actually better than the average player, you know, and my skill's going up. And suddenly you say, hey, I guess I will go try some Faceit tournaments and go to some Nerd Street tournaments. And suddenly you start winning those. And the next thing you know, you're like, wow, I'm on my path to being a professional esports player and a streamer. And really, I thought I was just an average, you know, gamer. So we think we're a lead into all of that too. You know, we don't see ourselves competitive in esports. We think we're going to help professional esports evolve.
That's really, really interesting to think about it. And, you know, I think, you know, one of the things I really wanted to ask both of you, and I think it's something that has been really amazing on our 76 Capital Leadership, you know, sports leadership show, has been talking to entrepreneurs like you guys and hearing about not only their backgrounds and the ways you think about the future, which I think you guys have done a heck of a job of sharing all of that with us. But was there a mentor, or was there someone in your life that helps you today or has helped you get to where you are within the business today?
Andres, you want to start that?
Yeah, I mean, so for me, my father actually was a great mentor, and when that's the first person I always think of. I mean, ever since, and I think that's also because he did foster this fierce sense of competition in our home and made everything about being performant. And when you were successful, you got rewarded for it. And he kind of made that fun. He's also, you know, extremely intelligent, successful business person who helped to guide us, but he made games out of the stock market, right? Where we had play money and we got to pick our stocks. And if we won, then we got actual real money he would give us. And he also never let us win at anything, no matter how outmatched we were as children, he would beat us. And then once I got old enough to start to beat him, he stopped playing. But that's a different story. For him, he's always been a mentor for me and an inspiration on that side. But then I've also been really fortunate to find what you could call almost like peer mentors, people actually like Chris, where you surround yourself with smart people, and you can help each other along, right? You can bounce ideas off each other, you can debate things, you can learn from one another. And I've always made it a point to try to surround myself with people who are smarter than I am. And that has worked to my benefit in my career. And I've been able to learn a lot just from being around the right groups of people.
And I'll echo that last point to Chris, and also echo a call out to my dad. I think having parents that encourage you when you go to them and you say, "Hey, I'm gonna quit my super cushy job," and they're like, "You're crazy, but okay, go for it." You know, that's important. Same with my wife on that front. I got to give her a shout out because I can't believe she's let us go down this journey. But I have a lot of people that I've learned a ton from as I've gone along. You know, like the list is almost too long, and some people who've been acting as mentors. But I'll put that aside for a second and talk about one thing that I think people don't take away enough from when they're doing this journey, which is like learn from your failure and learn from other people's failure. It's okay to fail, fail fast, right? fail quickly, as they say. But I mean, I've been lucky to be at a lot of smaller businesses, and we did some really good things, and we did some really bad ideas. I got some doozies. And every time that's happened, I've definitely taken stock in it and been like, I don't want to do that the next time. And I think as we're doing things, and Chris has been helpful in this, you know, we start thinking about ideas. We talk often about like, "Hey, do you remember that time we tried this and it didn't work? Let's not do that again." And I think, you know, mentors can help you guide in the right direction. Absolutely. And you should surround yourself with as many as possible. And like I said, I've got more than I can count. But to the one big thing I say to like a lot of entrepreneurs that are people who want to be entrepreneurs, like don't repeat failure, I guess, right? Learn from other people's failure, you know, be flexible. And one big thing that I always talk about is founder syndrome, which is a weird thing that happens. I've seen it three times now where like the founder has this vision of what the company's going to be, what you need. If you don't have that, you're lost. But as you go down the path, sometimes the money, the people, the market will change. So be open-minded and listen to what's happening around you and make adjustments. Don't have founder syndrome saying, "No, it's my baby. It's got to be this thing," right? And so I think, you know, as an example of one thing I've really learned not to do is that as a piece of failure, right? Because I think you miss opportunities. You miss good ideas if you do that.
Well, these are tremendous pieces of advice, and I'm sure that, you know, this is something that certainly resonates with me and certainly many of our viewers and listeners. And I just love the fact that you guys, you know, gave shout outs and to your fathers. I mean, that's a big thing for me personally. I think about my dad every day. I've, you know, he's been gone for 4 years, but still my main mentor, and he's still my guy, right? And it's still the guiding light. And I think that, you know, when we're, you know, many of us are fortunate enough and lucky enough to have really great, you know, moms or dads, it really means something. And it means, you know, and some people, you know, don't. And that's where, you know, a mentor can come in, and or someone can come in and really be an important sort of guiding light, you know, for someone. And that's something that, you know, we think is incredibly important. And as you know, as we go through this journey of life and building companies, it's just so important. And I think that what you're doing at Challenger is really exciting. You know, my team, you know, and I, as I mentioned earlier, Chad and Dan and John and Scott and Ty and the rest of the crew here, we're really excited to be part of Challenger with you, be on this journey with both of you. And again, thank you so much for taking the time to come on, you know, our 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show. I think you've given a lot of great inspiration to other entrepreneurs. I think there's a lot of people that will learn a lot about your business. Hopefully this will, there'll be some people that will want to reach out and want to work with you and help you, whether that's on the, being on the team, or whether that's as a partner, or whether that's one of the, you know, someone that, you know, could be in a really amazing strategic partner and help build this thing together with us. So we're excited to be, you know, have you as part of our 76 Capital family. And we wish you guys the best of luck. And, you know, I got to have you back on the show. And, you know, when you're, you know, to hear about, you know, what's next here and what, you know, what you've actually, you know, where you're going and what's happening. So we'll definitely
have
the time to do that.
Yeah, we're in. Thanks for that, that shout out to you, Wayne. Appreciate it. We're excited to be working with you guys. And we're really excited to see what happens in the future.
Well, you know, Chris Slovak, the founders of Challenger, thank you so much for joining our show. And, you know, wish you guys the best of luck. And for everybody else, thanks for tuning into the show. And of course, what do you got to do? You got to just go out there and just go make it happen, just like the guys here at Challenger. Have a great day.
M Media specializes in helping brands, personalities, and influencers build their reach through social media. They provide end-to-end podcast production, content creation, and social media distribution. So if you are looking to build your brand's reach and engage with customers via multimedia production, reach out to the team at 15M Media today at info@15mmedia.com. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode of the 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show with Wayne Kimmel and co-founders of Challenger, Chris Andres and Chris Slovak. Hope you enjoyed today's episode. Looking forward to welcoming you back next week.